Thank you for joining us for this EHS podcast episode. I'm your host, Angela Platt. I am a part-time PhD student at Royal Holloway, University of London, and I'm currently investigating how love is valued and experienced in religious families of old dissenters in England in the 18th and 19th centuries. Today, I'm joined by Dr. Geraldine Vaughan, who is a senior lecturer in modern British history at the University of Rouen. She started her academic career by studying the history of Irish migrations to Scotland and published a monograph on the subject with Palgrave in 2013. She progressively switched to the history of religion and has worked during the past 5 years on a project which will become a published monograph in the near future. She is interested in the relationship between ultra-Protestantism and the making of British identities in Britain and its dominions from the late Victorian era up to the interwar period. She is currently the International Officer of the EHS and a Fellow of the Royal Historical Society. Today, we will be discussing her upcoming monograph on anti-Catholicism in the British Empire. I'm so delighted to be here today with Dr. Geraldine Vaughan. Thank you so much for joining us, Geraldine, on this EHS podcast.
It's very nice to be there. Thank you very much for this invitation, Angela.
Yes, of course. Thanks for joining us. So to start with, you're currently working on a monograph about anti-Catholicism and British identities. Can we start with a definition, actually, of anti-Catholicism? How would you define anti-Catholicism on a political or even an ideological level?
Well, one way of answering this question would be to take an approach that is both theological and political, because anti-Catholicism was twofold. It was directed against an institution which was both religious and political, the Vatican, with the Pope at its head. Now, anti-Catholics accused the Pope and the clergy, the Catholic clergy, of being tyrannical, imperialistic, and anti-British. The second thing we might say there is that anti-Catholicism was also leveled at the Catholic laity, so at the level of parishioners. And those Catholic parishioners were thought to be uncivilized, uneducated, and more generally ill-fitted for liberty. So on the whole, the underlying idea, to answer your question, was that for anti-Catholics, Catholicism and political liberty and liberty in general were incompatible.
And what examples of anti-Catholicism have you discovered in your research?
Now, I don't know if I discovered anything really new, no secret, hidden, fantastic box of archives. It's more that, and I think that you can say that of all historical work of inquiry, so it's more that by taking a different perspective at the anti-Catholic phenomenon, I was able to evidence types of anti-Catholicism within a British imperial frame. And what struck me was how well anti-Catholicism was exported to the dominions and how well it managed to adapt to local circumstances. And then it grew differently from there. So I didn't discover this, but what strikes me is that the malleability, the plasticity of anti-Catholicism was probably one of the keys to its success and longevity. And in that sense, I can't say that I've uncovered a non-known fact or phenomenon or event, but what I have done is argued that new categories could be built to understand this anti-Catholicism phenomenon. Now, you have to be careful with categories. And the great French historian Marc Bloch from the École des Annales, the Annales School, always reminded his students and readers that in real life, nobody inhabits a category. So you have to be careful with those. Nevertheless, they are practical for thinking. And the types of anti-Catholicism, which I think I've uncovered, and I think that they existed during that time period, were threefold. So first, there was constitutional anti-Catholicism, and this was anti-Catholicism at an institutional, a stately, a constitutional level. So everything that had to do with the preservation of a Protestant state, a Protestant constitution, whether at home or in the colonies. And also what is interesting is that education was part of this type of anti-Catholicism, because towards the late 19th century, mandatory primary education was installed in Britain and in its colonies. So the issue of whether there should be religious teaching in state schools, or whether the state, either metropolitan or colonial, should subsidize Catholic schools, for instance, was a big issue. Second type of anti-Catholicism, and this goes back to what I said earlier, was what I called theological-political anti-Catholicism. And this had to do with the traditional critique of the Catholic institution, which started very present at the Reformation, 16th century Reformation. So this was more, this had more to do with anti-popery and liberty. And I mentioned this earlier. Third category of anti-Catholicism, which I uncovered with my study, is what I've termed socio-national anti-Catholicism. Now, this brand of anti-Catholicism associated Catholicism with a degenerate race. So it had to do with ethnic prejudices. It had to do with anti-Irish and anti-French in Canada, for instance, racism. And it also had to do with all the social stereotypings, the fact that Catholic nations were considered as backward when compared to Protestant nations, and they were considered as anti-modern. So this goes to answer your questions. No major, no crazy discovery, but rather an attempt at categorizing types of anti-Catholicism.
So thinking about those categories, were any of those categories more applicable to Britain, or was there a type of anti-Catholicism more generally which was unique to Britain that you discovered?
Now, I want to stress this adjective unique that you used in your question is very interesting. When you spend 7 years working on a subject, you always think that it's totally unique. It must be like love. So in fact, as I am a French historian, looking at British history from the other side of the channel, obviously I had to travel to see the archives, but I do reside and lecture in France. And it really feels like the other side of the channel in those these days of Brexit and COVID travel restrictions. So as a French historian, I've looked into French history to observe the brands of anti-Catholicism which flourished there. Now, you would call anti-Catholicism in France would be called anti-clericalism. And it was very common in France at during the same time period. So first, I want to say that anti-Catholicism was never a unique British phenomenon. It wasn't unique in the fact that it existed and that you could find forms of anti-Catholicism in Europe, in North America, in the United States, etc. But probably what was unique about British anti-Catholicism was the ways in which it was manifested. And I'll take essentially one example. And this goes to the constitutional form of anti-Catholicism and the protection of the British Protestant monarchy. This is incredible because it was only in very recent times, in 2013, there was a modification of the Succession to the Crown Act, and it has only been since 2013 that a British monarch is allowed to marry a Catholic. So up until 2013, this wasn't possible. So this is very interesting to see that anti-Catholicism was really engraved in the British constitution. And this has to do with issues which were demonstrated a long time ago by Linda Colley, for instance, this anti-Catholic ferment within British identity, the idea that the British nation was built against the Pope, but also against the great Catholic powers. If you think of France and Spain in the 18th and 19th centuries. So Britain was built against the enemy within, the Catholics in England, and the enemy without, the European powers and those who wanted to restore Catholicism in Britain. And This is also connected to a very specific British issue, which was the Irish question. And the Irish question poisoned, in a sense, and it obsessed political debates from the 1880s up to the 1920s. Separation of Ireland in the early 1920s gave rise to purely racist forms of anti-Catholicism. And the idea was that the Irish race was forever unfit for any kind of British identity. I'm here adopting the ultra-Protestant discourse. And this was very strong in Scotland and Australia. So to go back to your question, it was never unique in the sense that it existed and flourished elsewhere, but it was unique in its constitutional and anti-Irish manifestations.
Thank you, Geraldine. So I have a sort of related question to that. I wonder if you could speak a bit about the people who were involved in anti-Catholicism in Britain. Did you notice, for instance, any class or gender patterns, or indeed anything else more broadly speaking?
Yeah, that's a very good question, because when you observe, of course, anti-Catholicism was a discourse, but it was also, it came from actual people. And those people were men and women, so who founded clubs and associations, so anti-Catholic associations, ultra-Protestant clubs. So you had male and female organizations. And when you try, it's hard to find to evidence social statistics on that matter. But if you try and take a closer look, you'll find that you had men and women from, I would say, a lower middle class background. And they were very active and involved in those anti-Catholic activities. And that's very interesting, because they were the people who often not necessarily had the vote before 1918. So they were also trying to convey ideas and to express themselves in an age of democratization, but not yet in an age of democracy. Now, that obviously changed in the 1920s, but it's interesting to see how they tried to have a voice in history and a voice in the definition of British identities.
And when you say they were involved in different types of anti-Catholic activities, what would be some examples of these? What were the different anti-Catholic activities that ensued?
Yes, they were multiple. For instance, one of the major tool of propaganda was the writing, editing of periodicals and newspapers across the British world. So newspapers, periodicals, tracts, pamphlets, books were circulated in Britain, also in Australia and Canada. Other kinds of activities could be of a more physical and violent nature. And you can take the example of John Kensett in late 19th century England and early 20th century, who would interrupt services in Anglican churches, services which he considered with his partisans as being too Roman Catholic, so ritualistic, what he called ritualistic services. And there were also more muscular forms of anti-Catholicism, which were manifested during Orange Marches, and which were directed at Irish migrants, or the Irish descendants of those migrants settled, whether in Britain or in Australia and Canada. So I would say you'd had anti-Catholicism in discourse and anti-Catholicism in violent and physical actions.
So taking a step back, I suppose, and thinking more about wider context of British imperialism in this era, how did anti-Catholicism relate to that?
Yes, in different manners. Maybe I'm just going to take one or two examples to help you understand this. One aspect of this relationship between anti-Catholicism and British imperialism can be found, for instance, in the missionary movement. Protestant evangelical missionaries, and I'm just thinking, for instance, of the Methodists, were strongly, highly anti-Catholic, and they had to face when they were they went on those missions in Australia, in the Pacific, in the Canadian colonies, for instance, they had to face the competition of Catholic missionary orders. And I'm thinking, for instance, of the Jesuits. So there was very anti-Catholicism practical anti-Catholicism and the fact that they were confronted to opposing Catholic missionaries. Second example of the connection between anti-Catholicism and British imperialism can be given with the influence of the Orange Order. The members of the Orange Lodges connected loyalty to Britain and to the Crown, loyalty to Britain, the Crown, and the Empire, with a visceral form of anti-Catholicism. So there was a direct connection between both. And again, this was connected with the Irish question. The Irish were prolific amongst emigrants to the various colonies in the British world. And obviously, Catholic-Protestant quarrels, which existed, and disputes, which existed in Ireland, were exported throughout the British world.
You mentioned this a bit earlier. You talked about briefly the comparison between French anti-clericalism and the British anti-Catholicism. And I was wondering if you could talk about that a bit more, perhaps in the context of imperialism. How would anti-Catholicism have differed in Britain compared to the wider anti-clericalism in Europe, or did it differ?
Yes, it differed. I'm just going to think of one or two examples. First, for instance, it differed with the German case. In the late 19th century, there was a Kulturkampf in Germany. So there was a state-driven anti-Catholicism. And this was not the case in Britain. What is interesting is that if you look at the history of constitutional anti-Catholicism in Britain, you have ultra-Protestant associations asking for more anti-Catholic legislation or asking for less toleration of the Roman Catholics. But in fact, the British state just went towards more toleration of dissenting Protestantism and also of the Roman Catholics. So in Germany, state anti-Catholicism was implemented in the late 19th century, and that's a major difference between Germany and Britain from that point of view. In France, anti-Catholicism had, or anti-clericalism had similar grounds, similar ideological and religious grounds as its British counterpart. But you have to think that in France, the Roman Catholic Church was the majority church. So anti-clericalism was leveled at the Catholic Church, which was no longer a state church from 1905 onwards. So that's the major difference. Third Republic political elites in the late 19th century, early 20th century France were often quite anti-clerical. And this resulted in the separation between church and state, so between the Catholic Church and the French state in 1905. And this was a major victory for anti-clericals in France, for anti-Catholics in France.
Let's shift a bit to some personal questions about your research. And I'd like to start with, what sources have you used in the course of your research? And why did you choose to use those sources?
Well, I used whatever was available. And my main sources were the ultra-Protestant newspapers and periodicals, which were published in Britain and also in Canada and Australia. So what I did is I started out by looking at the archives also of the Imperial Protestant Federation, which was founded in 1898. And this was a very good starting point because this Imperial Protestant Federation federated a great number of associations and clubs, anti-Catholic associations and clubs. And thus this was a good starting point to get a general picture of the kind of societies that I had to deal with. So essentially the press, also, in some cases, when they were available, are archives of the various societies, but they haven't always been kept and they're not very easily accessible. There's one that's quite easily accessible. I'm thinking of this, the National Club Papers, for instance. They are available at the Bodleian Library, so they're easily accessible. And again, I looked at all sorts of pamphlets, writings, reports by ultra-Protestant activists and societies. And since I'm particularly interested in the school issue, I also investigated educational archives.
And what inspired you to embark on this arena of research?
It all started with a chapter that Professor John Wolfe, who was actually the president of the EHS in 2013 and 14, I think. And John Wolfe wrote a chapter in an edited collection on Empires of Religion, which was edited by Hilary Carey. And in this chapter, was about the Imperial Protestant Federation, and he kindly set the agenda for future researchers on the subject. And this was how the idea of this whole project was born, my reading this chapter by John Wolfe.
And what was that chapter called?
It was called Anti-Catholicism and the British Empire, I think.
So my penultimate question for you, why do you feel that this research that you've done on anti-Catholicism is valuable or important?
I'll start with a quote by the Mark Bloch that I quoted earlier. And I like this quote because he wrote, there are two kinds of historical phenomena in history, those with results and those which reveal symptoms. And I think that the history of anti-Catholicism in Britain and its dominions during the late Victorian era up to the interwar period, this history belongs to the second category, the category of symptoms. Ultra-Protestants were symptomatic of a will to assert a form of Britishness which could encompass the UK and its settler colonies. So those men and women whom we talked about earlier were very anxious that their voices should be heard in an age of democratization. And what's interesting about those men and women of ultra-Protestant organizations is that they were both reactionary and modern. They were reactionary because they had a very conservative vision of history, and they idealized the Reformation, and they wanted to keep the spirit of the Reformation alive in all parts of their lives. So they were reactionary in a sense, but they were very modern in the fact that, for instance, they promoted female clubs and associations, and also they were modern in their means of propaganda and communication. So on the whole, I think it's relevant to explore the worldviews of these lower middle class men and women who belonged to these ultra-Protestant societies and who imagined a common British identity across and beyond the oceans.
And my final question for you, I know you're working on putting this out as a monograph right now, but do you have any other research that you're working on right now? Or more broadly, I might ask, what's next for you?
Well, I'm interested in the transatlantic dimension of anti-Catholicism. So in other words, I would like to bring this research and examine it at the level of the US. So also look at, by comparing it with anti-Catholicism in the United States. Now, to talk about what happened a few days ago, I was fascinated that a Jesuit priest quoted Pope Francis during the invocation prayer at the inauguration of Joe Biden last Tuesday. When you think that John Francis Kennedy, who then became the first Catholic president of America, when you think that JFK had during his election campaign pledged that he believed in the separation of church and state and that he would not obey the Pope's instruction in political matters, so he had to pledge this for his electors to trust him. So when you think of this back in the 60s, well, America certainly has come a long way if now the election of a Roman Catholic president is a non-issue. So what happens is, we're organizing a conference, hopefully, where people will be physically present next September 2021, in Rouen at Rouen University. And this conference will be on the transatlantic dimension of anti-Catholicism. So we'll be focusing on North America from the 17th century up until today. And there we'll have British, American, Australian and French historians who will discuss this transatlantic anti-Catholicism in the long run. So this is my future project for now.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Ecclesiastical History Society podcast. Stay tuned for our next podcast episode, which will be advertised on our social media pages. If you're not currently a member of EHS, we highly recommend you consider doing so. It's a great opportunity to network with other like-minded historians and keep abreast of latest research in the field. More information is on our website, ecclesiasticalhistorysociety.com.